Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
What's going on, Millionaire Mindcast fam? Welcome into today's episode. I've got a great guest for you guys. A little bit different of a conversation than we normally have here on the Millionaire Mindcast, and it applies now more than ever. My guest today is Christine Ligorio-Chafkin. She's a senior reporter at Inc.com. If you're not familiar with Inc.com, we actually just had the editor-in-chief on the show a few months back, and they are an entrepreneurial publication, right? So if you're somebody that is a small business owner, you're an entrepreneur, you're out there looking at business trends and where things are going, then this is probably a publication that you know of or are aware of. You've heard of their Inc. 5000 list. And ultimately, my conversation with Christine today, we covered a lot of ground. We talked about politics. We talked about fake news. We talked about censorship. We talked about why entrepreneurship now more than ever is so critical and important, and what some of the best and most innovative and successful leaders are doing right now that you can learn from. I really enjoyed this conversation. We talked about some stuff that maybe got a little bit uncomfortable, but also how we talked about it, I think, was a great model for and really highlight for how to have conversations with people that are challenging, that are uncomfortable, that are maybe two people that maybe don't align on specific topics or belief systems and can still have a very constructive conversation. And that's exactly what we did in our interview here today. I really enjoyed her thoughts and really just sharing her experiences. She has a really cool and unique journey of people that she's worked with, like Katie Couric, early on in her career, being in DC, working in politics and covering that, all the way to working through her business and entrepreneurial journey as a publisher and reporter for Inc.com. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. It was a fun conversation and very applicable, especially with the current landscape that we find ourselves in terms of social media, censorship, how we ultimately allow certain people or platforms to influence us and how that dictates what paths we do or don't go down moving forward, and how that really just ties into creating and shaping our life and our businesses. So definitely going to want to take some notes here today. All the links, all the resources that we talked about will be at millionairemindcast.com in the show notes for Christine's episode. But if you guys are new to the podcast, welcome in. Always love meeting my fellow millionaire marchers who are obviously, you guys are money motivated, right? But what we talk about on this show isn't always about just how many commas or zeros you have in your bank account. Yes, that is important. Yes, that gives you more freedom and flexibility to live life on your terms and make the impact and to fulfill the purpose that you feel like you have here on this earth. But it's also about living intentionally and purposefully in all gardens and areas of your life. And the topics that we talked about today, I don't want to say they're taboo, but they aren't necessarily as integrated into the business community as they once were or that they now are. From the past, you know, a lot of people don't like talking about politics or like talking about the things that, you know, feel a little icky or messy, right? But now more than ever is the time for leaders and people to lean into those tough conversations. And that says who you are. It will attract people who align with those things. It will help you learn and engage and grow, which at the end of the day, that's what great entrepreneurs and leaders do. We invite the tough conversations. We lean into the challenging circumstances. And that is exactly what Christine shared in today's episode with some amazing insight and wisdom. So with that being said, if you're new here, be sure to subscribe. If you get any value from today's episode, all we ask is that you share this content with anybody that you think could get some value from it, that might find some wisdom in it to help them on their journey and their march, wherever they may be. And if you do enjoy it, please leave a review on whatever podcasting platform you enjoy listening to this content on. You can always see these episodes on the Millionaire Mindcast YouTube channel as well. But with that being said, let's dig into today's episode with Christine Ligorio-Chafkin from Inc.com right after this quick message from today's show sponsor.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor. Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started. I'm excited to welcome into the show Christine Ligorio-Chafkin. How are we doing today?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm fired up for this conversation. It's funny because the podcast oftentimes, depending on who the guest is, right? And you have an amazing podcast, which I know we'll be digging into here in a little bit. As you do more research and background on your guests, and there's always things that kind of, you know, get spotlighted and stand out to you. There were so many different things about you and what you have been a part of and your story and your journey that I couldn't really pick one, you know, specific lane to stay in. So I think those oftentimes lead to some of the greatest conversations as well. So I'm really excited to be digging in and hearing about your journey, you know, as a reporter and being in so many different fields and how you've then, you know, expanded your own entrepreneurial platform and the impact that you're making. So it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Matt. Who needs one path, right?
Yeah, that's boring, right? And as entrepreneurs, obviously, I think if anything, one of the things we struggle with most is staying focused on one thing and staying in one particular lane. But I'm curious, you know, in terms of kind of that metaphor, you know, starting on the freeway of kind of media and reporting, how have you kind of narrowed down and what has your journey looked like of kind of going from a 5-lane freeway down to kind of the fast lane that you find yourself in today?
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks. I don't know if it's a fast lane, but it's it's a lane. And, you know, I don't actually consider myself that entrepreneurial. I my job is to report on entrepreneurs day in, day out. I did write a book. I do have a podcast, the podcast, and my reporting is generally done through Inc. Magazine and for Inc. Magazine. I freelance occasionally, but not that often right at the moment. But let me tell you a little bit about how I got started. I was raised on a sheep farm in Wisconsin, went to the University of Wisconsin, and then moved to DC to do a couple of political reporting internships. I found the city a little too clean, too buttoned up for me. So
I'm sterile for you.
Yeah, a little bit. But being in the Capitol, reporting on congressional activities was interesting and great education in kind of how to crack through some of the interesting stories that happen every day, behind closed doors. But then I moved to New York and got a whole different experience reporting for the Village Voice, for one of the legendary investigative reporters of the last century, Wayne Barrett. And he gave me a whole different education in dealing with sourcing and, these finding, digging up stories you would never think. We wrote a book about Rudy Giuliani and 9/11, which kind of gave me a huge education in New York City politics, New York City business. And then I worked at CBS News for 4 years doing kind of beat reporting, daily reporting, and then writing for Katie Couric in the middle of, you know, the CBS Evening News, which was a fascinating experience. It was an education in breaking TV news is always, it's so fun. But writing for someone else was not what I wanted to be doing ultimately. And I was writing in her voice and her style. So, the economy collapsed in 2008 and I did a crazy thing, which is quit my job. And I took that opportunity to move out to San Francisco and freelance and sort of live that dream for about a year. But in that year, I started encountering all these little companies doing really fascinating things. And I was interested in, you know, reporting on education and arts and games and cultural moments at the time. But what I kept finding was all these cultural moments tied back to companies and tied back to interesting people building scrappy little things. Like there were some guys building, you know, an interactive map app thing that soon turned into photo sharing and soon turned into Instagram. And there were just four guys wearing plaid shirts sitting in a, you know, loft office and trying to hack something interesting together. And there was a guy building, actually two guys building a like big game that like took you all over San Francisco to view different pieces of art. And that turned into something not unlike Zoom today, but for corporate get-togethers that was called the Go Game. And so you were seeing these seeds of things popping up. And that got me really interested in how business works. And I'd never been a business reporter before, but I started writing for Inc. magazine, which is the magazine for entrepreneurs. And they had just such a fantastic crew of people reporting on both feature stories of kind of the people behind these companies and these crazy stories of human drama, of partnerships gone wrong in business or bizarre, you know, like failings of companies. And I just thought, wow, this is fascinating. And so I got more and more involved in freelancing for Inc. until they finally brought me back to New York and gave me a full-time job editing on the website. I've since gone back to reporting. So I write for the website and the magazine. And I, as you mentioned, have my own podcast, which is called What I Know. It is long-form interviews with entrepreneurs of some of the most fascinating companies in the world. And we talk about the big lessons that they learned from their hardest times in growing their company or in, you know, launching their dream. I should mention also, I wrote a book along the way called We Are the Nerds. It is the book about Reddit, and it has so many stories about how, you know, the internet as we know it today, in all its craziness, in all its wild western, it's just, you know, the dark trenches and the bright spots, all the beautiful things that we love online, you know, came from this place of not knowing how to kind of moderate content and manage all this user-generated content. And Reddit went through every single struggle that, you know, we've seen in the news recently with Twitter and Facebook. And its founder and CEO, Steve Huffman, you know, kind of lived through all those struggles a little bit that kind of predated, you know, Facebook and Twitter dealing right with them. He kind of had to deal with those. And my book lays it all out there.
I love it. Well, I'd love to circle back to that and dig in because I think it's more applicable than ever now, right? I'm sure when you were writing it at that time, you may have not, well, I guess, did you see in this kind of potential forecast off onto the horizon, or was it, you know, kind of fulfilled itself?
I mean, yeah. You always think in the moment that you're seeing the craziest version of whatever the thing is. You think you're seeing the end point, not the start point, right?
Yeah.
Because you can always look back and say, oh, I can see how we got here. But then as a news reporter, you're usually just kind of looking at, that's your news. That's your thing that you're looking at. You don't think, what's that going to look like in 5 years? What's that going to look like in 2 years, 10 years, you know? And one of the things that several CEOs have told me is when we're talking about the responsibility that these platforms have is, you know, could Mark Zuckerberg have ever thought of when in the early days when he was building a way for college students to connect to one another, whatever, or to rate each other's attractiveness, could he have ever thought that it would become what it is today?
Right.
Well, you can answer no, but you could also answer yes. It is an executive's responsibility to kind of game out and think about what could this look like in the future? And once you build a set of hypotheses, what could this look like? Maybe you've got five different outcomes to say, then multiply that by 10 because the world is moving so fast. The internet is scaling so fast and people are becoming more connected than ever. I think you need to have that responsibility as an executive when you're building a social company, when you're building a platform company to multiply it by 10 and do your projections in that way. Say, what's the worst that could happen? Then multiply it.
Yep, absolutely. And I know for a lot of people, you know, especially with things exponentially changing in the world right now and technology obviously kind of leading the way at that, it can be challenging for some people to get clarity in that vision and what type of infrastructure or, you know, how to necessarily pour the foundation of a business or to, you know, think in terms of what you're building and how it has that ripple effect and impact on so many levels. But I know you've been a part of and studied and seen and researched and witnessed firsthand so many ground up or early stage, you know, businesses that have really become juggernauts. And I'm curious for the listener who is maybe early on in their entrepreneurial journey or, you know, has that small business that really wants to 10 or 100 exit over the course of their career, you know, what are some of the trends and what are some of the common characteristics and threads and themes that you saw in those either leaders or cultures or organizations as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that not every company is going to turn into the next Instagram, right?
Right.
I mean, very, very few startups actually succeed. And I think when you're starting a company, whatever kind it is, whether it's, you know, a mom and pop shop kind of restaurant, local business, or whether it's a tech company that you intend to scale to, you know, 100x, you need to know that your risk of failure is very high and you need to have a very high tolerance for that. You also need to sort of try to build in enough kind of insulation from that failure. And I think entrepreneurs are really seen as these very risk-taking people. They're seen as folks who are willing to just like go out on a limb or take a bunch of investors' money and throw it at a wild chance. But what I've seen is that's really not the case with most successful businesses. You know, look at Warby Parker, started by two guys. Neil Blumenthal is one of them who I spoke to recently. And, you know, he basically said, I said to him, you know, you guys don't seem like a risk-taking bunch. And he said, that's because we're not. We do meticulous research before we take any chance, before we make any major decision. We research the heck out of it. And if to the extent that we're taking a chance, we believe that it is the right thing to do at every turn. Anytime they're spending significant money, anytime they're, you know, even when they priced their glasses, you know, that just under $100 price, that $95 price, that was something they thought they'd price their glasses at, I don't know, if I forget, $50, you know, it's something lower because they thought it would cost $20 to produce them and then they'd do a little markup. But their investors ended up telling them, no, it looks like the product is not as valuable as consumers would like to see. They would like to feel like it's a more substantial purchase. And they thought that was nuts. But in the end, the glasses ended up costing far more than they expected. So that was a very smart decision they made. But yeah, entrepreneurs also tend to be older than we would think. We always think it's this like 22-year-old guy out of Stanford, right? But successful companies often come after someone has already had experience in the field, experience building something. They've already tried a company or two in the past and they've learned some things. I think that experience should not be, is not something that's overrated, right? It's very important. And these aren't like glamorous tips by any means, but I would say most entrepreneurship that's successful does look a little more like a journey and not like a one-off shot in the dark. These companies, you know, Facebook is not the pattern to match when you are trying to start a company, I think. It is an extreme outlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Those unicorns, right? It's easy people to put those companies up on the pedestal and then compare their journey to it. It's like, you know, comparing somebody else's highlight reel and, you know, to your work in progress. And it can be very discouraging and kind of destructive in many ways. But I love what you said. And it kind of made me think of, you know, most of the successful small and mid-sized entrepreneurs that I know, that I've interviewed, that we've studied, they really do have this, you know, slow and steady and healthy dose of consistent optimism, but it's always rooted in kind of practicality and, you know, intense planning and sound and solid research. You know, it's, you don't want to be one of those people that over, you know, thinks things and doesn't take any action. You also don't want to be one of those individuals that's just being reckless.
Mm-hmm.
But I often call it kind of like velocity decision-making. You know, they move quickly, but they're constantly through state of awareness and kind of going back to the drawing board and, you know, taking a look at the feedback and the data, finding ways to just continue optimizing their plan and 2.0 in it and 3.0 in it. And, you know, some of those companies that you just mentioned, right, are world class at that in so many ways. So,
yeah, you know, I was just speaking with Jim Collins, you know, the author of Good to Great. He's this, you know, famed management author. And he just came out with a new book himself. And he said, you know, this is kind of his concept of the flywheel, right? Like you start out just like grinding away at this thing and then it starts kind of spinning and it gains some momentum, right? And you don't want to stop that momentum. You want to keep pushing it and you want to know what you're good at, right? You want to know what's making your company tick and to see what's right under your nose. I think that's like the most underrated skill is just to see what you're actually good at, what you're making work and to push that further.
I love that. Now, in terms of, you know, this staying on this vein of entrepreneurs and successful, you know, leaders within companies, you know, of all of the amazing individuals that you've been able to interview on your podcast and research and be in proximity to, I'm curious who some of your favorite business leaders are and why.
Oh, that's a great question. I tend to love founders who are not so rigid in their beliefs that they, you know, only have one thing to say. I love folks who you can see they are so intelligent that they can change their mind, right? They can, their beliefs evolve over the years and evolve as do things, really. I mean, this is most applicable when you think about, you know, the story of say Reddit and the debate over free speech online, which has just changed so much over the past decade. You know, Reddit was sort of founded with this ethos of freedom from the press, that the masses online can decide which headlines should be at the top of the site every day, can vote things up, can vote things down. And therefore, you don't need editors. You don't need editorial judgment. And that led to, over the years, certain Redditors pushing the boundaries so much that they ended up kind of bringing this debate over free speech and hate speech into the forefront, and which is fascinating. But, and we've seen that kind of culminate recently with some terrifying physical events, including, you know, Washington, D.C. storming the Capitol. And that's sort of this intersection of the crazy amplification of news and fake news that can happen online and this cultural thing that happens online of pushing the boundaries of what's okay to say. And that turned into a lot of like actual hate speech. But his, as a CEO, Steve Huffman's mind sort of changed on this over the years and changed on how to rein in some of that toxicity on his own site, how to rein in, you know, Russian disinformation and, you know, rein in sales of firearms or illegal substances online. And I think that kind of flexibility is fascinating to see happen. Someone's mind changing is fascinating to see happen. We saw this with Matthew Prince of Cloudflare, which is, you know, a cloud security company. They keep, I think, something like a tenth of the world's websites safe from DDoS attacks and other bad stuff online. But very, very simply, he's a very flexible thinker. I like that. And I think that as a journalist, it's just very refreshing to see someone's mind change. I think that it's very human and we can all learn something from that.
I love that. Yeah, I'm reading right now a book called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And that's one thing that actually the chapter I'm in right now is talking a lot about in terms of, you know, being open to, you know, having some of those conversations or being still, you know, it's okay to be rooted in a belief or a stance or have certain core values, but to also, like you said, I love the word flexible thinking, right? You know, always knowing that there could and is potentially a better way or more productive way out there than what you might believe to be truth or fact. And so in the world that, you know, obviously we live into today, you know, I think that's a lot, that's become very challenging for a lot of people, right? Is like, what is truth? What am I reading that is really, you know, factual and unfactual, and especially in the world that we live in today. I'm curious on, you know, being in that ecosystem and somebody that, well, first and foremost, have you felt an attack on your kind of profession and career over the last year or so? Or what are your thoughts in terms of, you know, the arena that you play in on a daily basis and how you hear people talking about, you know, reporters and journalism and media?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely want to talk about that. Let's take one more minute, though, on what we were just talking about with that mental flexibility and agility. I wanted to say that, yeah, that openness, especially in this moment when you're seeing the power of big tech companies and their leaders are kind of being forced to listen to their employees. Look at the kind of union, the activity at Google, at Twitter, where employees are starting to kind of band together and speak up and say, we will not stand for this kind of behavior. And I think that the best leaders that I've seen are folks who are very conscious of when they hire someone, when they hire a group of people, that they are working for those people. Their leadership is to their company first and foremost, and they are providing these people with livelihoods, right? So listening to your employees, it's just so important. And that humility that goes along with it, I think really, really can make you a better leader and stronger person. I was speaking with Phil Libin, the founder of Evernote, and he was like, he takes that to such an extreme where he was saying that every time he has a new thought, he just sort of thinks like, wow, like that's what my stupid brain thinks. Like, I'm curious how that matches up with what everyone else thinks. Mm. Like he's like very conscious that he is only one perspective, whereas the rest, like most of us are just like, okay, that's what I think. That's right.
You know? Right.
So I think to take a step back every now and then and just put your own thoughts in check by checking in with other people and know that you might not be the one exceptional person.
I think that's a great, great reminder, especially right now, right? Is to, you know, really just check your ego at the door, right? And take that step back. And, you know, I always tell my kids, and this can obviously be applied in any context, but I said, it's not about always being right. It's about achieving the desired goal and outcome in a way that still aligns with your core values. And that you got to be flexible with that, right? And so I just loved those two words of flexible thinking and mental agility, because now more than ever, if there was one thing that was taught to me, you know, in 2020, it was being willing to pivot and adapt and to hear people out and to say, just because you think this is one way doesn't mean it is the same way for somebody else, and based on their perspective and their experiences and right how they're you know, ultimately navigating their own terrain, there's got to be a way that we can meet each other in the middle and still have some kind of productive conversation to either learn and grow, right? Or to collectively achieve a goal together. And some of the best teams and organizations and, you know, business cultures, they are very intentional about that. And I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. And I do hope that that's something that will be a lasting effect of all this. Our own abilities to have those conversations and to open up difficult discussions before they become really, truly difficult, you know, to just say, what are you okay with? What is your comfort level with this? What's the way we should achieve this? You know, everyone's working in different ways. We're all living in different ways. To plan any sort of event or meeting, like you're dealing with people's personal stuff in life. And I think the employer-employee kind of respect level there and the communication level there has just gone way up and still has to go way up. But we'll see more of that. You know, if all learn to have those difficult conversations with friends and family members, you know, how can we do X? Like, what are people's comfort levels? And I think that that's something that we all are getting better at.
I agree. And I think that hopefully that trend in conversation and narrative will continue to, you know, be handled in the right way and reach the right people, because there is definitely, like you said, more of dark side of things as well, mm-hmm. in terms of censorship and depending on your perspective and what narrative you're getting from specific people. I always say, you know, we grow into the conversations and the environments that we're around and that we're in proximity to and that we're participating in. And so you got to be very intentional and very aware of, you know, what those things are and who those people are. And I'm curious, you know, in terms of the, you know, the world that you participate in and that, you know, is a very integral part of your career and your profession. Obviously, there's bad apples in every bunch. There's a good and a, you know, and a bad to every industry, I feel like. And, you know, what have you seen and what are you feeling right now in your own industry that you, you know, appreciate and that you feel like maybe has a bad rap versus, you know, what are some of the things that you're concerned about and that you think, you know, could have a negative impact in terms of how it influences people and culture and business moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different media landscape than it was a decade ago, than 2 decades ago. I mean, it never stops shifting. And while I can't see where it's going, I'm thankful that, you know, we still have these, I mean, we still have a press that is independent and that is big enough to succeed. I mean, I think that it's been really hard and detrimental to neighborhoods and communities across the United States to see the small newspapers be closing up year after year. I think that local journalism is really valuable. But, you know, at Inc., we have an audience of entrepreneurs, right? And that audience is not changing. It's stronger than ever. And we also have a robust events kind of ecosystem. And we have a community of entrepreneurs that is just needing our content more than ever and needing that community more than ever. So I'm lucky to have that. And at Inc., you know, it's a great small company and lovely people. So thank goodness for the smaller publishers that are still doing such hard work. And I think that we'll see niche publications like Inc. continue to thrive and grow and serve their communities. I think that journalists have an even more important job than ever right now, even as the numbers dwindle a little bit due to the changes in economy and due to the, I think, misjudgment of online ad capabilities and sales. We're seeing the kind of market shift there. We're seeing more folks go independent, more folks be reliant on, you know, their Substacks or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a shift that we're seeing, I think, to smaller companies, more independent journalists in the future. And I think that consumers are going to be needing, I think we'll need even more education in terms of media literacy as things become more fragmented, right? I mean, who are you listening to? Who are you subscribing to? What's your own personal echo chamber? I think that's going to be a really important thing for folks everywhere to consider. And it's no longer always the news being curated for you. You are self-selecting. And I think that's not something new. That's not inconsistent with the last two decades, really. But it is something that is becoming even more the case. So as things get more fragmented, I think that's a big topic.
I like that. I've never actually heard somebody kind of explain it that way in terms of media literacy, because it is kind of like a board game, right? And as you see somewhat of the rules and the players and kind of the strategy of it all somewhat shift, it almost, there is no kind of, you know, to-do or checklist guide in terms of how the consumer and how we're taking all that information in needs to discern and kind of shift with it as well and innovate with it as well. So I think that's an important thing. But I also think in terms of shifts, whether it's in media or whether it's in the economy or whether it's in investing vehicles or business in general, right? That also, you know, creates opportunity. And I'm curious what opportunities are you seeing right now in the business community that you're excited about, that kind of gets you fired up to, you know, engage with or follow along with, knowing that we have a lot of active listeners looking for that next trend or that next idea or just, you know, new spaces that continuously seem to pop up and evolve. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah. Well, we're in a global pandemic, so it's been a very strange year for business growth. It has been a terribly hard year for most smaller businesses across the country. I mean, so I don't want to underestimate that and the impact kind of that's had on communities and the struggle that that's created. But I think that it's tricky to predict what's going to be growing in 2 years because we've got such an explosion of companies in certain sectors right now due to the pandemic. You're seeing just so much manufacturing do well right now and so much real estate do well, so much virtual, any company in the virtual networking, e-learning spaces, they're just soaring, and, you know, anything in education. So those opportunities are going to continue to grow. I think we'll see some big shifts in the travel industry over the next year and a lot of growth there. And when you're looking at, say the restaurant and hospitality sectors, there's just this struggle to hang on 6 months now. You know, it is just, if we can last, we're going to be booming because people are itching to get out and do stuff.
Yeah.
And so if folks can hang on, I think they're in for a really wild ride after more vaccinations happen. I was just speaking to the founder of TripAdvisor about this, and he thinks that domestic travel is just going to skyrocket in about 6 months, followed by international, and then business will lag after that. But those are areas to watch for sure.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Well, I am hoping that is the case. I own a little hotel up in Lake Tahoe. So
oh, wow.
We're definitely...
Yes. Are you hanging in there? Hanging
you know
in there
what?
For now?
Fortunately, we've done very well just in the sense that Lake Tahoe's a very drivable destination to a lot of strong economies here in California and Nevada. So fortunate on that front. But
Didn't you have to shut down for a while though?
Yeah. I mean, we were shut down for about 3 months. There was the second shutdown, which... I weighed out a lot of the pros and cons and risks and rewards and actually decided to stay open responsibly and respectfully. But we did. And that was very, very key and important, I think.
Wow, interesting. Yeah.
For us doing what we decided to do. But, you know, you said something earlier that I've been hearing a lot of, it's funny, right? It's all based on the perspective, but I've been hearing a lot of people say that now more than ever, we need entrepreneurs and we need leaders stepping up and innovating. And then I've heard other people, you know, from their perspective say entrepreneurship is dying, right? With politics and with what policy is getting put in place. And I can only speak to what I've seen here firsthand, let's say in California and how many small and many minority-owned businesses being crushed through politics and policy. You said something, you said, you know, it's growing right now in terms of, it sounded like your perspective. And I'm just curious what your thoughts were around that and why entrepreneurship and why now more than ever?
So first tell me which policies in California are killing entrepreneurship allegedly?
Oh, well, the stay-at-home order and the fact that I can just walk down all of the downtown Sacramento grid and many businesses that I frequented, and majority of them were minority-owned businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
They are completely empty, vacant, not coming back. And I'm in a lot of different business communities and masterminds, and many of those individuals have expressed firsthand their hardships. So, a lot of that was due specific to policy put in place through our governor, Gavin Newsom. So we can
So absolutely. All COVID related. I totally get it. And I think there are other measures in California as well that were not necessarily related to the pandemic that also can be seen as detrimental to business. But I mean, I think that those folks in your communities would, if you ask them, what are you going to be doing in 2 years? They can't tell you, but I would bet that a really significant chunk of them will have started something else, will have started something new and will be right there sprouting new jobs and new opportunities for other folks and have brilliant ideas. You know, I think that out of the ashes sort of rise a lot of creativity and new ideas. And, you know, like I said, this time, this is a really, really hard time. It's been a really rough year. And our main streets all over the US are hurting. Mm-hmm. There's no way to overstate that. That said, this thing is going to turn and, you know, we're going to see lots of opportunity come from it. We've seen that in every period of darkness brings this light of innovation after it. And I think, you know, folks are already working on stuff. I think that being stuck at home is causing this like burst of creativity. Even if it feels dark now, we're going to see some really bright things come.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on Am I okay to ask a couple of political questions just to get your opinion and your feedback?
You can. I don't know whether I'm going
to. You can say, you know what? I'll prefer to answer
that. No, it's fine. It's fine.
At a later date. No, I'm just curious in terms of, you know, entrepreneurship and thinking about it. I like to weigh out and, you know, have these discussions in terms of the big companies, obviously, the elite companies thrived during the pandemic, right? I mean, that's
oh, yeah.
And then the small business owner, the middle class, really obviously struggling and kind of getting crushed in a lot of this. In terms of, you know, federal minimum wage, $15, I see the benefits and I also see how it can really make, let's just say from a financial model, it very challenging to, you know, turn profits and make it worthwhile and to create and inspire opportunity for entrepreneurship and small business owners. And then obviously seeing, you know, how tech is tying into a lot of this and potentially a lot of jobs going overseas. You know, do you think the entrepreneurial landscape is bright for the masses or for a select few?
That's fascinating. I don't know yet. I think it remains to be seen what happens in the next 6 months of the Biden administration, right? I mean, yeah. There's so much talk, not just about, you know, you said the minimum wage. There's antitrust is going to be a big spotlight.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot of movement on that on Capitol Hill. And I, at least that's what my sources say. And I think that we're also going to see continued talk about Section 230 of the Communications Act. I think we'll see that be, I mean, it's obviously already a hot issue. I can't believe, as someone who was looking at this years ago, I can't believe that like most folks actually know what that is now.
Right,
it's become such a big issue. And I think that, you know, basically folks are saying that the next few months is the time, you know, the next 180 days is the time that we have to take on that issue and talk about not just how do the social networks and the big tech players, Apple, Google, how do they have a responsibility for the content that they produce
yes.
or that they allow people to post? More so than that, I think it's worth pondering, how does one regulate an algorithm? Are we able to? Is an algorithm a piece of code that an individual has written or a company has written, and therefore could it be regulated as a piece of content itself, perhaps, is one theory. The algorithms are increasingly being blamed for spreading, you know, the sort of hate speech and speech that has gotten, you know, caused real world actions and is problematic. And that is something we need to look at, is how these algorithms amplify the content that is spreading the most vitriol. So that's a challenge. That's something we're going to see as well. And yeah, that might not seem like it's going to affect a Main Street entrepreneur, but it certainly will affect a lot of small companies. Say if Section 230 goes away tomorrow, anybody who deals in content, in speech, in just two people talking to one another can be affected by that. My colleague, Rita, she's brand new to us. Let me look up her last name. I believe it's Khalid, just wrote a great piece on Inc.com that you could check out about Section 230 and how that could affect the smallest businesses as well.
I love that. Yeah, because I think, at least to me, it feels like such a gray area and a lot of subjectivity in terms of who and what side, you know, you fall on and how you look at it. But at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I don't think it's like a partisan issue. It's both sides have
totally.
Different, like they have different takes on why these things are evil. Like and no one's got clear solutions for how to rewrite 230 or how to deal with a flexible minimum wage, right? Or deal with fair pay or you know, continuing aid to the smallest businesses that are really struggling right now. So, I mean, I do hope that, and I think that it's fairly universal that that folks hope that the administration really can sustain aid for small business through the rest of the pandemic, because this
absolutely.
Does not seem to be moving as quickly as it was expected to.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
I think my colleague's name is Amrita Khalid. So
cool. And we'll find that article and put a link in the show notes, guys. So check that out at Millionaire Mindcast on Christine's episode. And I think, you know, that is something that there's so many things out of our control, right? But what can we focus on that is in our control? And, you know, obviously our mindset is one thing, and, you know, who we surround ourselves is with one thing, what actions we do or don't take is one thing. And I think right now, you know, from just hearing you and all the amazing people that, you know, you've interviewed, and I know a lot of our listeners, is comes back to, at least to me, this word of leadership. And, you know, instead of, you know, laying down, leaning into the tough conversations, right? And, you know, kind of having, of course, a framework for the rules of engagement and how we can, you know, work together. And instead of, you know, having these fierce conversations be very unproductive. But I'm curious in terms of someone who is putting out content, curating it and researching it and reviewing it and just in that world all the time, what kind of, I don't know if rules is the right word, but what should people be aware of in terms of being stewards of curating content and how they're engaging in conversations to be productive and to be constructive in a way that is going to help everyone, you know, grow and move in the right direction?
Yeah, I think you just said part of it, right? You have to be mindful. You have to be constructive. As a journalist, a big part of my job is sort of spotting what's new and what's interesting. But then once you do, you also have to put it in context. You have a responsibility to give people a bit of the history of why this thing is happening, where we are in history, where we are in the business landscape, and to also get the back end of the story right, the business financials, what is really going on there? What is the real business model? Not just what the company might advertise itself as, but what does it really make its money on? Those are some goals for myself in every story I write. And I think that other companies, when they're putting out content, I think that there's no longer going to be, after the next year or two, such a definition between being a platform and a publisher, right? That's changing. So I do think it's worth taking on that responsibility of doing good journalism when you're putting anything online, right? Whether it's just a headline on your own website, or, you know, you're just advertising a simple thing, like tell the truth and just have a clean heart about it. And it's not so hard. Like, literally anyone can be a journalist. It is a trade. It is not a profession. You just have to check your facts and you just have to have a curious mind and be willing to dig around a little bit and tell things in a clear and concise way. It's not rocket science.
Right. It's interesting, right?
One might make it out to be, but
it's
not. I was
going to say, yeah, you know, it seems like today, and I think it just comes back to being a critical thinker and just being curious, and asking questions and not taking everything at face value, no matter what platform it comes from or who it comes from, right? You always got to ask questions and do your own research. And you said, you know, a keyword that stood out to me there in terms of, you know, responsibility, you know, take responsibility, whether it's responsibility in your own life, in your own marriage, in your own parenting, in your own health. And you, right, it's that ownership and that accountability to what actions and what words you're saying. And I think that's, you know, some characteristics of what makes amazing leaders in a business setting, you know, in a social setting, in a personal setting. I got a personal question for you in terms of, for myself. I know that a lot of people have said this to me, and I don't even like the word. It's kind of become, maybe it's because of who says it all the time, but fake news. How do people discern, you know, where they're getting their news? And, you know, what is kind of your process in terms of how you fact check things and who, you know, I don't want to say classify as fake news or what you classify as fake news, but how can people be a little bit more critically thinking in what they are allowing to influence them?
Oh man, it's tough because I feel well, no, it's actually very simple, but but I think that a lot of the consumption of, like, quote unquote fake news today is like really borderline news. And then folks are sort of making a choice to suspend disbelief and just like go for it, like dive in and get deeper down a rabbit hole because it's sort of entertaining. And then it's sort of like you build a like social circle there and it just becomes kind of part of your like realm of awareness, you know? And so I think this is why regulating social media companies and others is kind of dangerous and scary, is because once you start to censor things, like say a mommy blogger who's a little bit into, you know, she's curious about anti-vaxxing, right? Like, fine. But then if the social media company slaps a warning label on that or takes that content down, that like the whole circle of folks who is seeing her stuff is like then has an eyebrow raised. Why is that happening? Why is what I want to see being taken down? Why am I being censored in a sense?
Absolutely.
And that is scary. You don't want to see, you don't want to feel as a person like you're not being able to experience what you want to or read what you want to, right? So, and I think it also, that behavior itself is radicalizing, which is why I think that the companies alone can't necessarily do it. I do sort of feel like regulations have to happen. And that's not a typical place for I don't know, me or someone maybe work, you know, writing about entrepreneurship and advocating for them all the time. But I think that's kind of where we've gotten to. And so it's a tricky thing. And I think that, yeah, like you were talking about with the kind of media literacy, I think you're going to see your kids get that education in school. Teachers mm-hmm. will try to take it up, even at their young ages. You know, mine have gotten a little already on how to look at data sets, which is crazy because they're little.
Wow.
But taking a survey or something, there's little ways into it that I think a lot more of the teachers will be getting into. How can you tell like what's real journalism? How can you tell what really happened? And these kids are smart.
Like, they are.
The way that kids can look at a couple seconds of TikTok and know exactly the whole context of that like meme and whatever. Like, and to apply that critical thinking to other, you know, just general consumption of stuff and news, and make sure that people do keep reading the regular daily news and learning the context historically for what's going on is really important.
Christine, this has been some amazing insights. And I think a good question to wrap it up would be in terms of, you know, what is your, if you were to, you know, leave the business entrepreneur, the leader with, you know, a call to action in terms of how they navigate the message and the mission that they're on based on all the things that you know and all the amazing people that you've learned from and you've interviewed, what would you say to that individual as they move forward?
Well, I think right now we are in this moment in time when if you've survived as a business, there's nothing more important than your community. And that is the people immediately around you and the neighborhood or geography in which you live, right? So those people who work for you or work with you, or maybe it's just your family right now, maybe you're a solopreneur. Those are the most important relationships to nurture right now. Even if you've got 100 employees, you should be asking every one of them as often as you can, how are you doing? How are you hanging in? How can I help you? If you've got resources to help folks, do so right now. Because the next 6 months are still going to be really rough. And the businesses that I've seen continue to grow right now are actually helping their communities with every ounce, every thread that they have. They're helping their people and they're helping the folks who've helped them. They're customers in the past, they're customers right now. So just continue to nurture those who nurture you.
Great word of advice to wrap up an amazing and very thought-provoking conversation. I want to thank you and share some gratitude with you for your time today and sharing your journey with us and some of your thoughts. I'm not sure if we went too far off
you,
of target.
Matt.
But
I know. Yeah, it was really great. And if you guys want to hear more thoughts from folks who are actually very successful entrepreneurs, unlike myself, check out my podcast, What I Know.
And we will be sure to link all of Christine's information, her website, all the ways that you can find her and listen to the podcast at millionairemindcast.com on her episode, or those will be in the show description below if you're watching this. So with that being said, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you for having me.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you share it with somebody else who maybe needs to hear this today or that could gain some value from something that was talked about or discussed in today's interview. You just never know, one piece of information, a conversation, a tool, a resource can completely transform and change the trajectory of someone's life or their business. So if you get any kind of value or you want to support the show, all we ask is that you help us organically get this in front of more people. Also, for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey and unlock more financial freedom, get more time back and just level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, courses from our guests, all kinds of free content, downloads, checklists, upcoming event info, and how you can connect with us live in person, all kinds of great valuable tools
You can get that over at therichlifeacademy.com. Last but not least, I always want to know, who do you guys want to hear me interview next? Let me know. Shoot me a text at 844-447-1555. With that being said, until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friend.